All right, thank you everyone for taking a listen to the PopArt podcast. I'm Peter Jordan. I'm one of the digital learning coordinators here at PopArt. And we've done one podcast before, but we're looking at wanting to do a monthly podcast on issues that are important to students with autism and looking at it from how we can speak directly to autistic children and teens, and also speaking to parents, teachers, educational assistants, potentially siblings also. So to the listeners, if you have issues that you want us to discuss, or perhaps you'd like to come onto the podcast, then contact us and we'd be happy to hear from you. So we're first meeting with Vina, who is in charge of the family school liaison here at PopArt. And so welcome, Vina.
Hi, it's so nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. If you can maybe just tell us a little bit about the family school liaison part of our organization for the listeners, that would be great.
Sure, I'll make it quick. The family school liaison is really a service to support primarily families who have children or youth who are diagnosed with autism. And I provide weekly workshops as well as consultation for parents, caregivers, as well as school personnel to support all sorts of concerns or areas of support. And it's been a really, I think, successful part of our program here over the last several years.
Yeah, that's great. And I mean, even when we think of things in education, thinking about it for all, that family school connection and how that works is important for everyone, anyone who goes through the school system.
Absolutely. We know that when there's good family school collaboration and engagement, the outcomes for students are always better.
Yeah, I even think of my own son's journey through school, and I think of different teachers, not naming any names. If you're out there, I'm glad you're a great teacher. But when I connected with a teacher more and I would pop around and see how they're doing, I know that that was always a more successful year for my son.
Yeah.
So what are some issues that you found in the last year or two that have been recurring or popping up for our youth with autism?
Well, you know, there's been some, you know, general themes. I think situations where students are not feeling heard in terms of planning for them within school. So not being part of IEP meetings, not having the ability or the opportunity actually to be able to give their own feedback about their own planning has been one area. Another really has been supporting children and youth to access the right supports when they need it. So many times we see that supports get put into place after perhaps a problem has occurred. And we're always wanting to be proactive when we're trying to support any child or youth. And that usually leads to better outcomes. So those are a couple of things that sort of are themes that have come up.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And I think the main topic that we're going to be talking about today is self-advocacy. So I think those two points kind of lead nicely into this concept of self-advocacy. So before we get talking about it, can you just sort of unpack that term a little bit for us so that we better understand what you're trying to tell us about self-advocacy and how that connects to youth and children with autism?
Yeah, so self-advocacy, one, is super important. Self-advocacy really is important for all of us, Peter. I mean, we really want all children to be developing self-advocacy skills as they're moving through school, as they move into adulthood. Specifically for our population of autistic children and youth, we're wanting to make sure that the skill building in this area of self-advocacy meaning being able to speak up for yourself, making your own decisions, finding information that interests you, finding the supports or the help that you need. These are all things that are encapsulated with self-advocacy. It's important for us to start building these skills early with children and youth because it does take time.
And I guess even the concept of self-advocacy, the being a self-advocate is something that we all have to do in so many different domains of our lives. And so, you know, and I think we've talked about it a bit before, like I think of anyone's healthcare journey, their journey with health, you have to be an advocate for yourself. Otherwise, you can get lost in a system pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
And so, You know, you look at, you know, I see a chiropractor and a physio and my family doctor and a naturopath, and I have to synthesize all the different ideas coming from all those different people to figure out what I should do for my own health. And that's a complicated thing to do.
It is. And I think also when we're thinking about self-advocacy, it's about sort of knowing what information you need to really promote your goals or the outcomes that you're looking for. And for so many kids, sometimes asking for help can be difficult. Knowing who to ask for help from can be challenging. And then we also, you know, can add in some other barriers such as communication differences and so on and so forth. So we have to really make sure that we're, you know, supporting kids to find the ways to get their needs met.
So, Veena, let's say I were to limit you to just four main points that you could share with autistic children and teens about self-advocacy. What would those four main points be?
Yeah, it's. I'm so glad that we're doing this podcast because I think it's so important if we do have any children and youth listening to us. The first thing is really thinking about your strengths. You know, this cannot be minimized. Every single person has things that they're good at. Me, you, everyone. And it's really important to think about the things that you're good at so that you can use those strengths and continue to grow and learn. You might see strengths in yourself that you also see in other people. Or you might have a really unique strength that's quite different from others. What's important is understanding what those areas of strengths and abilities are for yourself so you can utilize them in your life to continue your development. That's definitely one thing.
Thinking about our strengths is something I think we all often overlook, and we don't consider, that we are quite good at a number of things, and it's a great starting place for all of us, particularly for children and teens with autism, thinking about how they can be self-advocates for themselves. Okay, so point two.
We also want to at the same time consider some of our challenges. So just like everybody has strengths, every single one of us has challenges. And it's really important for children and youth to understand that, like, when you're sitting in that classroom, that every single child in that classroom, your peers, your teacher, your principal, your parents even, has a profile of strengths and challenges. And so you're not the only one who's going to have some areas of challenges. So once you understand or you consider some of your challenges, you can sort of try to think about, how can I focus on getting support for those areas of difficulty or challenge, and really understand what works to help support those areas.
So point number two is to consider your challenges. And maybe that's something that we often all focus on too much, is what aren't we particularly good at. But I think we do have to be reflective in so far as what aren't we good at and how can we change that? What can we do to affect the change so that we can improve on that particular skill we're considering? So that's point number two. And so then point number three is?
Get support, obviously. So if we're understanding what our profile looks like, what we're good at, where our areas of challenges are, then we also want to be able to access support. So because we all need support for whatever reason, for example, for myself, I'm directionally challenged, so I have to use Google Maps. That is the tool I use every single day. You know, children and youth are going to require either the support of, an EA at times, perhaps a speech-language therapist, perhaps certain tools or a laptop or a communication device. Whatever the support is, consider those supports, welcome those supports, and understand that everybody requires some form of support.
So I think one of the keys here is to identify where you'll need support, but then also what that support is. And so maybe you might need some support in figuring out what your support is going to be. So the support of the support. So that's our point number three, your point number three, Veena. And so then what would the next point be? Number four.
I think really, lastly, I would say learn more about what your disability means to you. And You know, we know that autism is a spectrum disability, which means that it really affects each person differently. And so many autistic people find that learning more about autism and connecting with other people who also have autism is a helpful way to understand themselves better. It can also help to talk about yourself and the things that you like, your interests. We're going to have a really good resource list as well at the end of this podcast that you can link into to see some ways that you can connect with others with autism as well.
Okay, thank you. So let's just review the four main points that you are suggesting for autistic children and teens to consider when thinking about self-advocacy. So consider your strengths. And then secondly, what are your challenges? How might you overcome some of those challenges? Thirdly, what supports do you need? I guess that's two and three kind of go hand in hand. So when you have those challenges, what will be helpful to you with those challenges? And then number four, a bit of a self-reflective one, being able to understand your disability a bit better and how that affects you.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. And so then if we're speaking more to parents or teachers,
yeah,
how can they then become one of those supports for them? What are some of the points that would help parents and teachers do that?
And I think that here we really want to think about parents and educators, other therapists being allies on this journey of self-advocacy for children and youth. We're going to be allies helping them along in this process, right? And so one of the first things is we want to be neurodiversity affirming. And what that really means is supporting and helping autistic children and youth with self-advocacy by normalizing differences. This is something that needs to continue to be encouraged and learned within our homes and our families, within our communities, and within our schools. When we think about the term neurodiversity, it just really refers to the diversity of the human mind, right? Because there's infinite variations of this sort of neurocognitive functioning that we all have. And there is no sort of neurologically normal package. And so what we want to do is be neurodiversity affirming, understanding this.
That's such an excellent point, Vina. And I think it's great to actually hear it spoken out loud. We think of and we celebrate the diversity in so many different areas of our society. And yet we haven't spoken, our society hasn't spoken enough about the differences of the human mind. Maybe the mind was incapable of speaking to that, but I think we need to celebrate those differences because the different ways our different minds work allows our society to go in new and different and interesting directions. So let's celebrate those differences and just be cognizant. Let's be aware of the differences that we have amongst each other. So that would be our first point there. And then what is your second point?
I think it's really important for educators and parents and caregivers to listen. And when we say listen, it means like active listening. Start by asking, you know, the child or your student, you know, what would they like others to know about them? And what are things that are important for them to share or to be part of, let's say in school or at home? Or in the community, recreation, or any other extracurricular activities. So really start listening and asking these questions. We want to not assume and make decisions for autistic individuals who are using augmentative and alternative ways to communicate without first exploring ways to get their input first through their preferred communication methods as well. And it's really important for us to be aware of body language and gestures that are communicating decision-making as well. So asking questions and listening and taking that into account, super, super important.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm trying to listen carefully, particularly to that point. But it's I'll speak for myself, I tend to make so many assumptions about those around me, and I make a lot of guesses, I suppose. It's like, well, this is where they're at, this is where they're at, and I should just try to help them. But I often don't say, oh, where are you at? And then even by asking that question, it then has them be a little bit reflective themselves.
Yes.
And they might be able to just be able to share some things that they wouldn't have otherwise shared.
That's right. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think autistic children and youth might do things differently than you or I might. But that's totally okay, right? That's also respecting some autonomy. And that's part of building self-advocacy.
Right. Okay, good. And then your next point would be?
Giving choices, kind of along the same lines. We're asking, we're listening, and we're giving choices. So providing choice is really great because it helps autistic children and youth have a sense of control, autonomy, like I've just said. But also, just making choices in itself is a really good skill to learn. There are really a lot of options that parents or even teachers can give to kids, like simple ones at home or in school, within your day-to-day life. So what movie are you going to watch on Friday night? If you're doing an art project with your child on the weekend, what materials would they like to use? We can, you know, think about small ways to instill the option of choices for kids. And then there's might be some bigger options, but trying to utilize choices on a regular basis is a great, great opportunity for autistic children and youth to share their opinion and be involved in a plan.
I think with choices too, sometimes we start thinking bigger ideas, but I think even just, you know, provide it depending on where that student is,
yes.
It's provide them with some simple choices.
Absolutely.
If that's where they're at. And so for Friday night movie, it's like, what do you want to watch on Netflix? Well, no, hold on. That's too big. Like, that's even too big for me most nights when I don't know what show I'm going to watch.
Yeah.
It's like, just keep going on and on. But here are three movie choices. Which of those do you want?
That's right.
And then they feel like they're part of the choice, the decision.
Absolutely. And that's what we mean. And we want to do this on a regular basis because it's also, it takes practice for kids to make choices. You know what I mean? Sometimes it can be very anxiety inducing for some kids, but making choices, making decisions is going to be an important part of that self-advocacy later on in life.
And so that's almost explicitly teaching how to make a choice.
Absolutely.
And then once we teach those skills in movie on Friday night, then when it gets to the bigger decisions later
yes.
on, they're faced with maybe 3, 6, 7 choices, but
yes.
it's easier for them to make
Absolutely.
That choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then last big point for teachers, parents to help?
Yeah, I think it would be probably giving specific feedback. And by this, I just mean helping your child or youth understand, you know, what they're good at and how they learn best. So this is really productive feedback, right? So for example, you might say to a kiddo, you seem to remember better when you're able to see the information written down instead of just listening to the instructions. Do you think that's helpful for you? You can kind of see in that phrase, you are providing some information to your child about what you've observed, but you're also giving them the opportunity to say, yeah, mom, or yes, Miss A, that's how I learn best, or to correct you to say, actually, no, I like both. And when we do that, we're really helping them understand what we're seeing is working for them, but also providing the opportunity for us to get some corrections or revisions from them as well, right? And when they understand through the feedback what's working for them, what is productive, what is helpful, they'll then continue to want to seek out those resources or those specific tools, hopefully. So I think that's a really great point for parents and educators to remember, giving that specific feedback.
And I think that's a great point even for any teaching that we ever do, is
yeah.
it has to be very specific. And
yeah.
otherwise, you know, you give those general comments, oh, it was a pretty good job.
Yes.
Well, I don't know what part was pretty good. You know, when I think of
yeah.
like an analogy of when I do a little bit of tennis coaching, if I say to them, oh yeah, that was a good forehand. I mean, it came over the net and it went in between the lines.
yeah.
So it was good, but was it, you know, did they get the topspin on the ball or did they get the slice on the ball? What were they trying to do and what specifically did they need to change?
Absolutely. I think coaching is a great analogy because I think specific feedback is often used well in coaching, actually, with sports and recreation. And so it is something that is very helpful in the home environment as well as in schools.
Yeah, great. All right, so the just to review for parents and teachers, the four main points that we were looking at was be neurodiversity affirming, make sure you listen carefully to your student, provide them with choices, and explicitly teach how to make choices, even on simple things, and then later on it becomes the bigger choices, and then giving very specific, detailed feedback so that they can improve on what they're working on at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us, Vina, with Family School Liaison. Is there anything else that you wanted to wrap up on
self-advocacy? The last thing I just wanted to say is if we think about self-advocacy, we want to always remember that we can learn the skills for self-advocacy slowly but surely. Starting early is important because we want to build those skills as kids are moving through their school years. And then really, we can feel assured that when they're moving through that transition to adulthood, that they've got some of those really great self-advocacy skills in place to really promote their goals in adulthood.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us. And we look forward to bringing you on another time for the Pop Art Podcast.
Thanks.
All right.